Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trad Tasman Talk for another week. This is Friday, the 22nd of May, 2020. I'm Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in Auckland, and it's good to see you all.
Yeah, we are live on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. Hello to everyone in the chats. If you're watching on the Unshackled live chat, you can send through a super chat directly by in the chat pressing the dollar sign, writing your message, typing in your amount, and we'll read it out during the show. Now it's going to be a more New Zealand politics focused show because you had a leadership spill over there today. It brought back memories for us in Australia over the past decade.
Yes, that's the question. Is this the first of many to come, or is this one of the rare leadership spills that we have here in New Zealand, especially in the National Party? It seems to have gone down quite amicably. They rolled Simon Bridges, but the olive branch has been extended to say that he's allowed to remain, even on the front bench, it sounds like, if he's interested. So they run a clean ship in the National Party.
It all came from a catastrophic poll earlier in the week, which had Jacinta Ardern 65% preferred prime minister and Simon Bridges 7%, which I think is even lower than our most unpopular opposition leader, Brendan Nelson, for the Liberals in 2008.
He's been really struggling in the popularity ratings, like not able to break double digits most of the time. But the party vote polling had been quite solid. Even a few months ago, late last year, they were polling, just shy of, or just able to form a government, obviously within the margin of error. So it was kind of anybody's election, even though Simon Bridges' approval ratings were and preferred prime minister ratings were non-existent. But what happened with the last few weeks now, the polls show that his ratings had dropped even further, and the National Party was going to be languishing in the low 30s, maybe high 20s. And it was sort of evidence that his days were numbered anyway, and it has been for a while. And Todd Muller decided to pull the trigger and say, okay, I'm going to do this before the election rather than after. And I think caucus largely agreed, because when half the caucus is going to get wiped out at the election, they're whatever. They got nothing to lose, right?
Yeah, so, they get pretty shit scared.
So they want their jobs, and they thought, okay, if Muller fails, then we're gone. If we stay with Bridges, we're gone. So we'll take the slight chance that he can turn this around.
Let's have a look at a photo of them both. This is Todd Muller here. So he's pretty bland looking. Looks to be obviously well into his 50s, and well. Clearly bald, and Simon Bridges, to my who has just been deposed, looks much more photogenic. Got the full set of hair. It's not grey at all. And he also is part Maori, which is that's not uncommon for a lot of New Zealanders.
But he would have been, if he had stuck around and won the election, he would have been the first prime minister with some kind of Maori family history. So that that would have been his, but it wasn't really something he played up really. But the real issue with Simon Bridges there that Muller has got is Simon Bridges' accent was something that people mocked from the get-go. He had a history of running some failed projects, essentially. Like his job as a minister was quite controversial, even though he didn't do anything that terribly bad, I think. The overall impression of Simon Bridges from the get-go was not super competent. Even people considered him untrustworthy. That was the number one result in a word cloud that was released with the News Hub poll. Most people thought he was untrustworthy. He was not super eloquent, not really the best spokesman. that you could have as a leader, and that's where he really struggled. What Mueller has got is he may be bold, but he's a big guy. When you see him standing with the rest of his caucus, he's a head and shoulders above them, you know, physically. So he's got that kind of imposing figure. He's able to speak clearly, at least in an accent that New Zealanders are all able to you know, consider common and normal. And he seems pretty well able to get his ideas across. But in terms of what their differences are, ideologically and philosophically and their entire worldview, there's not much difference, really. If you compare the two, maybe Mueller is a little bit more, he's a little bit wetter, a little bit more moderate, as they like to say. But on the whole, it's not really a huge difference in that. So if he breaks through, it'll be he's fresh. He'll be able to get extra media attention that Bridges couldn't get, and he doesn't have he doesn't come with the baggage because nobody knows who he is. So
my judgment is that New Zealand voters are quite superficial. Oh, well, that's not uncommon with voters in general, that you sort of have to have a certain style and level of charisma to be elected Prime Minister of New Zealand.
And
the substance whether is
he
part
has that
of it.
Charisma, whether he has that charisma, I don't know, but he is definitely on the superficial front. He is going to be an improvement on Bridges, really, just having a quick look. So, and I'm seeing the chat, and the New Zealand chat anyway is pointing that out as well. In terms of diction, he is much better. With someone saying here that nobody could be worse than Mr. Bridges in that regard. So it's likely a step up in terms of the way that the National Party will be able to present themselves to the media. Whether it's going to come across like that with the voters, hard to tell, because the chasing sort of the average voter who's not watching the show, who's not paying attention to politics at all. So what they're going to see on TV, the way he's able to come across to people on TV, is basically going to be the difference as to whether the National Party sees any change in the polls.
And this is this spill just a few months out from the election is what the Labor Party did before the 2017 general election with Andrew Little. He was Labor's time in opposition under John Key, they had a bunch of boring blokes as opposition leader, and no wonder they got thrashed at those elections.
I have forgotten which one, because I can never remember the names of the Labour Party leaders that they cycled through. But one of them,
proving my point.
One of them apologized for being a man. That was the high point of the Labour Party sort of embarrassment before Jacinda Ardern took over. And she did take over a few months before the election. Everybody said, who is this? We don't know who she is. Nobody's ever heard of her. But she had a communications degree, and that's where she did really well. Todd Mueller does have some business experience. So he's been involved with some large companies like Fonterra and should have the other one ready that I couldn't quite remember. He didn't go into Parliament when he was super young, even though he had been involved in politics from the beginning. And that's sort of it. What have we got? So he did a spell as a CEO of Apatar. He did Fonterra. He was a member of the executive team, and he reportedly was receiving $800,000 a year as a salary. So he took a pretty big pay cut to actually get into Parliament. Sort of similar in that, people will have flashbacks there to John Key, who again he was earning millions a year as a CEO, and he dropped down to $200,000-$300,000 mm-hmm. in Parliament. So similar kind of that setting where this is not his career where. He's not here to make money. He's actually here to win. He's there to be the prime minister, right?
Which is
people like that go into politics to be the prime minister.
The parallel to that is Malcolm Turnbull. He already had a net worth of $125 million when he entered Parliament in 2004, and of course a lot of his wealth was in investments and that. So he was earning dividends even while he was sitting as an MP as well. Well, actually. He paid his own money during his political career. He wrote the Liberal Party a $2 million check during the 2016 federal election, which he just won. So it was very expensive for him.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's money well spent, I think. And yeah, so there's the other executive role that I've got here was Zespri as well, which is one of our biggest exporters. They're all, yeah, massive monopoly primary industry services jobs. He's rural. May as well go through the whole list here. I've got an article that was written on him by David Farrar, who runs KiwiBlog. He has, he's been involved with the National Party for a long time. He does the polling for the National Party, and he's friends with Todd Muller. And he writes here that Muller was actually endorsed by former Prime Minister, which one? Oh, well before my time anyway, Bulger.
Yes, he, yep. National Prime Minister in the 90s, who's, yep. He's gone pretty, socialist in his
yep.
older years.
Yeah, he's basically joined the Labour Party, or when the Labour Party needs someone, to be on a committee to make it look sort of, like they're consulting both sides, they bring Jim Bulger on board. So he's considered to be pretty wet there. But yeah, anyway, when he was younger, back in the 90s, he was involved with Jim Bulger's campaign. And yeah, that was basically it. He left Parliament, he came back. He's friends with all of these people who are involved in politics and the National Party. And the description that I wanted to read out here is that he was on the Young Nationals executive committee with David Farrar. And in the 90s, it was a battle between the wets and the dries on economic policy. And the description here is that Todd was always the moderate voice in the middle. So we nicknamed him Moisty, a little bit dry and a little bit wet. I'm not really sure if that's the kind of endorsement that you're looking for. But that's basically, if people are wondering what kind of guy is he, apparently he is moist. That's the way that David Farrar would describe him. So, and we actually had this debate a few weeks ago with our, on Trans-Tasman Talk with, the chat going wild about that. And I wasn't really sure what, if we could give a political application to it, but apparently we can. So if you're kind of not genuinely conservative and not genuinely liberal, then you can be referred to as moist. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
The term we use in Australia, what is it? Moderate, though. When a Liberal MP is called moderate by, say, the Nine newspapers or the Guardian, that usually means that they're of the far left of the party.
So that's the concern. In terms of his recent voting record, conscience votes, he's voted basically in line with Simon Bridges. Voted against the recent abortion legislation, voted against the euthanasia bill, etc. So he does vote on, sort of on the conservative side on conscience issues, but his focus is on politics. Is on economics. He says so. We're likely going to see a massive focus on economics, and like Simon Bridges, he will evolve on other issues, because that's what happens when people get to be the leader of the National Party. They always tend to suddenly change a whole bunch of their personal views that are no longer convenient.
I'd say that's probably the case going forward in our Liberal Party, especially since the marriage law postal survey in 2017. Scott Morrison, he abstained from the same-sex marriage vote, but doesn't mention or be outspoken on any LGBT issues since then. We've got a super chat here in the Unshackled live chat from Red Foreman Bear for $5. Thank you so much. Love your work, guys. How many guns are left in the hands of commie resistors? Ratio, numbers, approx, you reckon?
Well, I've got exact numbers. They managed to buy back about 50 to 70,000 of New Zealand's 1 to 1.5 million firearms. So you can do the math on that, because I'm not doing, the math live on air. But just take 1.5 million and then subtract 70,000, and then you'll have a pretty rough estimate as to how many.
Have they during the lockdown? Has there been many more efforts to buy back guns or?
No,
what?
They haven't. It's been completely silent since they did a bunch of visits. You know, they conducted a few raids against people like myself, and have given other people various friendlier visits. Really, I think they've sort of softened a little bit on that. And there's been no further noise on that, except for a report that I should have mentioned last week, on last week's show, and I haven't written it down to mention this week, but there was a report done into the buyback, and they spent twice as much on administrative costs. So there was a blowout of 100% on the administrative budget. And they also sort of cannot conclusively confirm that any improvements in safety have been made, or any they can't really genuinely say it's a success you know, on any measurable metrics. And the you know, amount of gun violence in New Zealand has risen to the highest in a decade or something in the year, you know, in the last year. So that's been the result, kind of predictable, I suppose, but worth mentioning.
I got in because I get all the alerts from the New Zealand news apps on my phone. I got an alert earlier in the week that we've often talked about the mongrel mob. They set up their own roadblocks in the north. Apparently, there was a raid on quite a number of them.
Yes, it wasn't really a huge story here, because it happens every month or every 2 months. The police run a big raid against one of the gangs, and they bust a couple of $1 million worth of meth, you know, execute 20 search warrants on different properties in the same evening, you know, send them all off to the courts and jail. And then, you know, after a few months, they'll get released and they do it all over again. So whether I suspect you have a similar situation in Australia with gangs as well, but it's not, it makes the news, but it feels like it's the same people and the same gangs over and over again. It's just, you know, every year they just do it, the same thing.
And the National Party has also got a new deputy leader as well.
Yes, so that is the story there with the deputy leader. Or the former deputy leader, now Paula Bennett, was the deputy leader for Bill English. So she was actually deputy prime minister for a year. She stayed when Bill English lost the election. He left and Simon Bridges came in. She had been appointed the campaign chair. So she was basically running the campaign as well. And she had a nickname called Paula Benefit, because her claim to fame was claiming the benefit when she was 17 and, you know, ended up going into politics. And that earned her the nickname Paula Benefit. Now, Simon Bridges went on TV 3 days ago and referred to her accidentally as Paula Benefit. So that was pretty embarrassing for him and for her. And I suspect, in addition to the two terrible polls that they had contributed to their demise, because they were essentially joined at the hip there, when Bridges was gone, it was guaranteed that she was gone too. And Todd Muller was running with Nikki Kay. I've never had to say her name out loud. Both of them were trying to roll Bridges and Bennett. So Nikki Kay is the new deputy leader.
I'll bring up a photo of them both. So that's Nikki Kay on the left there, the blonde white one. And Paula Bennett, she's part Maori as well.
As well, yes.
And so, obviously graying hair as well.
Yeah. So she actually had cancer recently, had been out of parliament for a while, but she seems to have recovered. She's famous for holding the Auckland Central seat. So she's one of the few national MPs who holds a urban liberal seat. That may give some insight into her disposition. I should say something good about Paula Bennett before I move on. Saying she was high on beneficiaries, and that's right, she did have a reputation for being you know, working with the welfare reform programs that National's bringing in. Those were actually her ideas, her programs. And so she was, you know, obviously very much hated by that, you know, by the left. And also she was actually quite liberal on many issues. So she was on the wet side of the aisle. And so she, you know, was not liked by conservatives, not liked by the, you know, the welfare, the dole bludgers, as they are sometimes lovingly referred to. So, yeah, that she was definitely had a whole bunch of different enemies there, and you know, I suspect various political reasons why she wasn't super popular, out, you know, with caucus anymore. And that brings us to Nikki Kaye.
That's how we say the name.
Say it right. It is Nikki Kaye, and it's just my bad for not actually having said it out loud ever. So the Auckland Central Liberal seat. So she's even more liberal than Paula Bennett was. She beat Jacinda Ardern twice in 2011 and 2014 for the seat. And actually, Jacinda's current seat is Mount Albert because it was a safe Labour seat. So she actually ran away to grab that seat. But because of that, Nikki is quite she's, you know, an urban, you know, socially liberal.
Yeah, sort of like the seats that we have in Sydney and Melbourne, like Wentworth and
And the MPs Kooyong. In them tend to be those annoying MPs that we all hate, right?
they're particularly vocal on climate action. That's
yeah,
a common
climate
theme.
Action. So I hadn't yet mentioned climate action, but I'm coming to climate action, which is going to be another interesting subject here. But they're sort of they're trying to bring together this conservative liberal side, and we're uniting National, and we're going to please everybody, which is exactly what Simon Bridges and Paula Bennett were all about. It's the same story. Whenever I hear somebody say, oh, yes, we're going to bring together people, especially in politics, and make, you know, be liberal and be conservative. That's just
the broad church, called in our Liberal Party.
Yeah. And that's what it's called here as well. And the broad church in terms of politics usually means pretty left wing. It's in parliament when it comes, the left, it's always drifting leftward, always, every time. So that's Nikki Kaye. And the big claim to fame that Todd Muller has is that he worked with Jacinda Ardern to pass the zero carbon bill, and Nikki Kaye was quite involved in that as well. She was very heavily involved in the abortion bill as well several months ago. So their big claim to fame is that they introduced the zero carbon bill, and they're basically
let's just remind green, our audience about the zero carbon bill. It's zero carbon on the things they didn't exclude from the bill.
Yeah, that as well. Yeah. So but it's going to come back and bite. You know, it's going to hurt the economy massively in the long run. We're talking billions and billions of dollars. We already basically bleed out, I think, $5.3 billion a year on the carbon credit scam, and it's going to be even more with zero carbon. That's not genuinely zero carbon. Oh, chat has given me the one other moment as well that we know Todd Muller from it was a story that went international, so a lot of the Australian audience will know it, but one of the Green MPs, and for some reason I can never remember the names of my Green MPs either.
That means they must be less annoying than ours. Yeah. We only know, Goleroy's. That's the only one.
Goleroy's, that was it. Goleroy's. But it wasn't her, and it was Chloe Swarbrick. That's the one. She was giving a speech and apparently being heckled by Todd Muller, and she said, "Okay, boomer," in Parliament. So the famous "Okay, boomer" that was heard around the world was actually directed at Todd Muller, who is in fact not a boomer, and he's Gen X. But being a boomer has nothing to do with your age and everything to do with your heart. So
well, he does. He looks. He could be mistaken for a boomer.
That really is the roundup on both of them. It's hard to tell where this will go in terms of the way they will resonate with the public. I suspect will be far more positive than Simon Bridges and Paula Bennett ever were, even if they are not more positive for us, obviously coming from a conservative perspective here, from a traditional perspective. Not an improvement, but I suspect in terms of how they will be received, could work quite well. But the same legacy media that they rely on, you know, that Simon Bridges relied on, that stuck the knives into him, those same knives are now being pulled out of Simon Bridges and are ready to be plunged into Todd Muller. So, you know, especially starting with, well, I'll turn my chair the other way. You can see my Make America Great Again hat in the background, and I put that prop up there tonight because that's one of his one of the photos that have been circulating of Todd Muller have been him posing next to his own personal Make America Great Again hat. So that's, you know, we'll see how long it takes for him to recant that. And yes, you know, maybe he'll publicly burn the hat or something.
Because it's a new white hat, remember?
That's right. Mm. Cool. So that's, yeah, we've had a good big New Zealand story today to start the show off with. So that's been really good. And if you've got any super chats, please bring those through on Tim's channel on the Unshackled. And thank you to everyone who's watching the show currently and who is in the chat on both channels, and as well to those who have come through from the BFD on, you know, who are featuring, you know, at least they share the Right Mind stream. And obviously, we've got Rational Rise, who sort of store our shows afterwards. So, thanks to everyone who's supporting the show, and we will carry on with an Australian story now.
Yes, so we're continuing on the path out of lockdown with because I went through that. It was a couple of weeks ago now, the National Cabinet, which is made up of Prime Minister Scott Morrison and all the state and territory leaders, they had the three-step framework for a COVID safe Australia. And there's different reopenings and restrictions lifted at each different stage, but each state is going at its own pace and not necessarily doing all the steps at once. So It is hard to keep up with it at all, but June the 1st has been the date by our Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews when cafes, pubs and restaurants will reopen with 20 patrons, which is a step two, 20 limit. There's no date for when gyms will reopen. That's, I think, what a lot of people are probably curious about, because it's been widely noted that the lockdown handles have been expanding during this time. So I think there'll be a surge in gym memberships when they open, but they'll still be restricted to 10, 20 or 100, and they all have to have COVID safe plans.
I don't know what everyone saying they've been gaining weight under lockdown, which actually is something that I have not experienced myself. I actually found that I somehow managed to lose weight by being in lockdown, even though I haven't been, you know, able to get out and exercise. And I wonder if it's partially based on how much food is kept in the house, and possibly that Amy may just secretly be starving me while everyone else has been stocking up on huge amounts of food.
Well, with the food that people have been stockpiling, it's been high in carbs. The pasta, rice, obviously all the baking at our supermarkets now. Pretty much all the quantity limits have been lifted now. So if you so desire, you can buy 20 packs of jumbo toilet rolls at Woolies.
Discounted.
And
they're on discount now, right? At least in New Zealand they are. So you can get good deals on toilet paper finally.
Have most of your supermarket limits been lifted?
Yeah, I believe everything's gone. I know that a week or two ago they were still struggling with flour and some rice, and it was a pasta, I think.
Yeah, that was the last one.
But that was due to international issues, so. Yeah,
but our supermarkets are fully, pretty much fully stocked again. That's just sort of a blur now, though, those empty shelves. Now, a lot of the past 2.5 months has become quite a blur. It's like, whoa, can't believe it got that way. But probably the biggest point of contention now is, or because even though Australia is a federation, we've seen more power centralized in the federal government. This has been a reminder that the state government still have a lot of powers at their disposal. And The main point of contention between the states now has been the decisions of Queensland, Northern Territory, South Australia, Western Australia, and Tasmania to shut their state borders. New South Wales, Victoria, and the ACT never shut their borders, so you could travel freely there. Dia Beltran, who's based here in Melbourne, she was currently staying with her friend Dean up in southern New South Wales. She was able to get past the border really easily and can come back at any time if she likes. And Gladys Berejiklian, the New South Wales Premier, has said that, you know, we, as part of getting the national economy back on track, we need to open up the interstate travel again. And she was, I would say, bitterly slapped down by the Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk, who said, "Oh, I'm not opening my state borders to the state with the highest rate of community transmission." And it was sort of like, ooh. Because yeah. The New South Wales Queensland border, there's the twin towns there of Tweed Heads and Coolangatta, and so that's been incredibly hard to manage the checkpoints, yeah, and it's got better there. WA has the hardest border closure, that if you're an Easterner, you're not allowed in the state at all. And Pauline Hanson, she has put out a call for businesses in Queensland who can have standing in the High Court of Australia to challenge the state border restrictions, because Section 92 of the Australian Constitution says trade, commerce, intercourse among the states, whether by means of internal carriage or ocean navigation, shall be absolutely free. But the test is whether the border closures are meant to restrict interstate commerce, which they're not. They're meant to, they're on public health grounds. And obviously in the age of the internet, you can still do
e-commerce. Yeah.
And also obviously the trucks have an exemption if they're carrying goods from Queensland to New South Wales. A lot of people have been pointing out the irony that Pauline Hanson is campaigning for open borders between New South Wales and Queensland, even though she wants strong Australian borders. And today Clive Palmer was denied an exemption to visit Western Australia by the WA police and the Premier Mark McGowan, and he always threatens legal action against people. Yep. His last high profile legal fight was against one of our YouTube vloggers, Friendly Geordies, who called him Fatty McFuckhead. So he's vowed, Clive Palmer, that he's going to go to the High Court to try and gain entry to Western Australia, because it'd be interesting what the High Court would have to say on it. But the precedent is these are not designed to restrict trade and commerce.
It sounds like you've got a completely legal version of our community checkpoints that are still sort of semi-legal in New Zealand now, as long as they're managed by the police. Obviously, a community checkpoint doesn't truly have the authority to stop you, from going anywhere, but they surely have attempted to do that. And it was, we did have inter-regional travel being banned for a long time, but since we've hit level two, all of the regional restrictions have been lifted. Flights domestic flights are back to not normal, but I think you have to buy two seats when you fly, and they're flying at a much reduced schedule. But you can get around the country if you need to. The number of cases that we have are down to zero or one every day, all cases linked to existing clusters. And with level two now, the bars have opened as well. So everything is pretty much largely back to normal, other than all of the sort of dystopian ritual hand washing with hand sanitizer and the sort of distancing that you need to try and keep to, except that it's seems to be non-existent in most public places. If you go around, you know, going to your local Bunnings or whatever, it's, you know, supermarket, everybody's just walking around like normal. Large gatherings are still not possible. There has been a big kerfuffle around churches and other religious gatherings where via press conference, Jacinda Ardern says, no, you're limited to 10 people in a church, et cetera, or, you know, a religious gathering. But if you look at the law that they've passed, it's, you know, a gathering is people who are less than 2 meters apart. So the question is, well, if people are more than 2 meters apart, then you're not gathering, are you? And that's what I've been saying all along. And the police have actually confirmed that. Various documents were leaked. But now the police have basically made, you know, the final version of their document public and say, well, this is our advice, internal advice to all of the police involved to say, when people are more than 2 meters apart, they're not gathering. So therefore, when it comes to religious service, you know, if you are called or you come across or are called to or whatever, have to be involved in some kind of religious gathering, as long as everybody is in groups of less than 10 that are less than 2 meters apart, or there are various groups of people more than 2 meters apart, it's fine. If people are breaking the rules, you actually need to seek legal advice before attempting a prosecution. Obviously, we have the Bill of Rights and the Human Rights Act both give, you know, have protections for religious freedom. And so therefore, to take any kind of, you know, to single out religious activities would be discriminatory, would be, you know, unlawful in New Zealand. And the police have actually taken that quite seriously. And so therefore have said, look, we're not going to get involved there, even though the health, you know, the Ministry of Health and, you know, basically on the order of Jacinda Ardern has basically said, no, we don't want any religious gatherings. It's perfect. It has been and will be 100% legal to have religious gatherings, as you know, and the police will not be involved as long as there's social distancing being followed. So that's, you've got that tension there now between what the Prime Minister wants and what the police are saying is actually legal. So that's going to come to at least possibly some kind of resolution on Monday. But for now, there's a bit of a division in terms of some churches obviously saying, okay, cool, well, we've been following the police advice and we're going to continue doing that. And other people saying, you know, without Jacinda telling us what we can do, we're not going to do anything, you know, without her specific instructions. So I think that's going to cause a little bit of tension in some religious communities, as they are now called.
With obviously our Prime Minister and our Premiers have had a lot of joint press conferences with their Chief Medical Officer or Chief Health Officer. The medical health officers, they've largely stuck to just the medical advice. In my interpretation, haven't had the tyranny of experts that we've seen in other nations in the Western world. It is actually the leaders themselves who've been more overzealous and gone above the health recommendations. For example, the health advice has never said that schools should be shut and that state borders should be shut, but the it's obvious for political reasons. The state premiers, they're paranoid about getting the blame if there's
exactly.
a spike or a death or more deaths.
And therefore, you can't be too safe as a politician. And therefore, the answer is just shut it all down. Just shut it down. Shut it down, and then you can get reelected, and your popularity will go up. So that's the way it's happening. And that sounds, and in New Zealand, that they've been joined at the hip in that sense, where it's supposedly independent advice, but for some reason, absolutely everything that the Director General of Health has said and the Prime Minister has said have been always in complete agreement. So they basically, you know, there has been heavy political interference there. That's the only real way to describe it, because otherwise you wouldn't have the Ministry of Health advising, you know, school shouldn't be shut down, etc., because they don't need to be. That which was initially the advice, but that changed because of political reasons. That's exactly the way it went. Yeah.
We've got around 500 active cases in Australia, so it was 600 active cases last week, so it's contracted by around 100. Six cases in the last 24 hours here. And we have cracked the ton when total deaths. We were standing at 98 for about a week and a half. Now it's gone up to 101, but none are linked to the recent outbreaks, which are all in Victoria, which were the Cedar Meats, the Halal Slaughterhouse, and several McDonald's in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, a few aged care facilities in lockdown. But there's been no, you would say, catastrophic outbreaks where people are in hospital. We've got 9 nationwide in ICU and 41 in hospital. You want to the coronavirus?
I'm looking at your numbers. I'm like, whoa, that's high. Our draconian lockdown has been incredibly effective at destroying COVID-19, and probably incredibly effective at destroying the economy too, as we will find out. In the end, the final results won't really be noticed for a few more years, and that's where hence the focus on immediate political survival. We have nobody in ICU. Zero in ICU for the past week. We have 1 in hospital, just down the road from me. So the final case in hospital is there. The most recent case that we've had has been in Auckland, but we only have 3 active cases in Auckland at the moment. Half of our remaining active cases are in Waitemata, which is just north and north and west of Auckland, and that's pretty much it. We're 2/3 of the cases are in the Auckland, in the greater Auckland region, one or two in the South Island, and a couple out in Hawke's Bay, which is on the east coast, and that's it. We're down to just 28 cases. So I think we're actually going to stay in level 2 for a bit longer now. If I have to make a prediction for next week, because the press conference is on Monday, if they're this close to eradication, they're going to keep pushing it. So I'm predicting an extension of level 2, or that's the only real way where I see this going. And then once it's gone, then the question is sort of what's next.
Well, Victoria was my state was probably the closest state that was going for the eradication strategy, but the political pressure just became too much for Daniel Andrews that he couldn't
as,
take
as it. Dan Andrews Stan collapsed now.
I think it has, and I think the mockery of him, the name calling him dictator, Chairman Dan, doing the photoshops of him as Kim Jong-un and in Nazi uniform. I think that probably got to him. I talked last week about the state Liberal MP Tim Smith, who called him a friendless loser. He hasn't backed down or been reprimanded for that since. He copied our Uncuckables poll from last Thursday about which name is better, Chairman Dan or Dictator Dan. So we do have some members of our state opposition making some noise now. Yep. And to its credit, Melbourne's Herald Sun has been profiling the businesses affected from the continuing lockdown. But of course, Herald Sun's a Murdoch paper, so it's just part of their right-wing push.
Yeah, exactly. The fast right-wing conspiracy led by Murdoch.
Kevin Rudd was on CNN's Reliable Sources talking about the Murdoch mafia.
That's a good one. Before we continue to the next topic, we'll go back to the Super Chats for a bit. And thanks to those of you who are doing Super Chats, keep it up. I will read out this one since it's sort of directed at me, from Red Foreman Bear again, $10. Is your ammo supply secure? Some German guy, buy guns and ammo, clarion call, etc. You guys are canary in the coal mine. As far as I know, in New Zealand, I mean, we manufacture heaps of our own ammunition and so on. I mean, in terms of imports, things are okay. They've really tightened up the imports, like what you can import and what you need permits for to import now. It's like, it's pretty crazy where any kind of accessory, like even airsoft stuff, can be, get you in trouble at the border, essentially. Not that I've experienced any of that myself, but I've definitely heard a lot of horror stories from people. So there's a bit of talk in the firearms industry in New Zealand, or you know, sort of the wholesalers, the importers, to see if we can bring some actual manufacturing into the country. That's sort of perhaps where things will go in New Zealand, who knows. But it's, you know, in terms of what's available on the shelves, it's, you know, the prices are going up, but sales seem to be high. People are still buying tons of guns and ammo, even in the middle of the beginning of the economic depression. That seems to be a sort of part of a new normal now. It's sort of when any crisis hits, the solution is that people go and line up outside of gun stores now, you know, including coronavirus. The best way to fight coronavirus, go to your local gun store.
Americanization of our culture. You are allowed to buy guns and ammo again in Victoria and go hunting. So I think there are a lot of gun control freaks who are quite disappointed about that, because no gun control is enough for them. The other super chat got here from Senator Slayer for 99 Australian cents. Thank you for that. Though he hasn't got a message here, which is unusual for him. He normally wants me to read out something outrageous.
And that's right. Mm. He may come back with something now that he knows. Mm. And in terms of what ties in, actually what I was going to talk about next sort of ties in, is a good follow-up here, where people are still buying all kinds of things. All the different shops are open, all kinds of all the commerce is back to, say, normal in New Zealand. But what people are buying is much less. People are being a lot more safer. I saw today that credit card debt, or at least the accumulation of it, is down 40%. People are trying massively to pay off credit cards. People are trying to reduce their debt, which is actually a good thing. And I'm almost surprised on the whole to see that the debt is going down instead of up. That may be temporary. People are just preparing for the economic disaster, you know, the depression that's coming. They it's starting to be safe. People are starting to spend less. People are starting to pay off debts. And we can see that in the mortgage wars that are going on with the New Zealand banks. Over the past few days, I've been following them one after the other. They're dropping lowest interest rates in New Zealand history, and it's being broken every single day. So we've got one bank, the BNZ, that's dropped all of their rates, all of their fixed rates, from 1 year through to 5 years, below 3% now. The other banks are following suit as well. We've got the lowest ever rate now is on offers from the state-owned Kiwi Bank, which is a one-year fixed rate for 2.65% interest. We're seeing 2.85 on 18 months, 2.69 on 2 years, and 2.99 on 3 years, 4 years, and 5 years. So it won't be long now before all of the interest rates drop. Even though the OCR, the official cash rate, has been stable at 0.25. And that's, it seems to largely be the amount of sort of liquidity that the banks need, the amount of cash they need to pump out, especially with quantitative easing going on, with, you know, $60 billion. I think we talked about that last week. You know, printing it out, obviously all virtual.
Diluting the value of the currency.
And they need to keep the borrowing going to keep, you know, it's and obviously if people are losing their jobs, they risk losing mortgages, and if you get a whole bunch of mortgagee sales, the house prices drop, and that gets even worse for the banks. So they're just trying to head that off, and they're competing to just keep dropping rates. I think we're still much above Australia. I'm not sure if you can tell me off the top of your head what the kind of rates in Australia are at the moment. But I think they're in sort of the lower 2% from what I've heard.
There's been no change from our banks in the their variable and fixed rates. Interest rates are still at 0.25%. Yeah. But with now more businesses able to viably reopen now, they're offering a lot of back in business discounts to encourage people to consume again, which I've taken advantage of a few, which is always nice. I get them either on my phone or via email. I forgot to talk about there is no date yet when cinemas will reopen, because I've still got some Hoyts vouchers and points to redeem.
We've got our cinemas open, Tim. We're running well ahead of you now, apparently. So we've got everything from the cinemas to the bars to the strip clubs to the churches. You know, we're all, yeah, whatever tickles you is you're good to go in New Zealand now. So no more. Basically nothing has been singled out, other than the attempt to single out churches, of course, which is doesn't have any legal basis. Other than that, there's been is just absolutely everything is able to be up and running in New Zealand. Of course, it's a question of customers, right? Who's, you know, some places can't even aren't even opening because they've just got no customers.
We had an announcement yesterday that Myer, our biggest and most iconic department store, they announced they were closing their stores during the pandemic and the lockdown, even though they didn't have to shut because they were selling essential goods. Everyone was sort of wondering, would they reopen because they'd been struggling for a while? They were still open for online shopping. They are going to reopen next week. But Target, which is owned by Wesfarmers, which also own Kmart and Coles, they've announced they're shutting 75 Target stores. Target is one of the discount department stores, which has fallen out of favor now. Most people go to Kmart, and there's going to be around 1,300 job losses with that. Wow. Which it's sort of in this day and age, like if you have basically two brands of department stores, which are basically the same when more people are shopping online, then it's you can sort of see how it's going to become unviable. But a lot of people are worried because their Target country brands are shutting, which is a lot of rural stores and that. So a lot of people in regional areas are concerned they'll lose some local in-person retailers.
What's ahead is going to be incredibly hard to predict. So it's, you know, what we can see already happening. Same thing with the amount of job losses. We have headlines every single day now, sometimes multiple per day. You know, Fletcher's Construction laid off 1,500 people this week. Air New Zealand has announced another 1,500 layoffs, or no, three and a half. I want to say 3.5. Somebody you can let me know in the chat, but I do believe something like 3,500 layoffs at Air New Zealand. Seeing other businesses laying off 100 here, 1,000 there. The amount of unemployment in New Zealand is going up by at least 1,000 a day, and that's, you know, only the beginning. Now with things starting to open up, obviously businesses are not getting as much throughput as we've just discussed, and those numbers are likely to continue going through. So, you know, it's not something we're going to be covering every week, I suppose, but it could be at least, you know, the big numbers. But by September, in 3 or 4 months, we're going to have a far more clearer picture of just how grim this is going to get.
I've spoken to you about our JobKeeper wage subsidy program, which we were told that there were around about 6 million Australians receiving it. The Australian Tax Office confirmed today that, well, they blamed a poor input from the businesses, that is actually 3 million Australians receiving JobKeeper. It's not going to cost $130 billion, the scheme. It's only going to cost $70 billion, which we're not going to be in debt as much as we thought. But for the tax office to basically miscalculate by half, that is a pretty horrendous public service error. And although it's sort of a good,
it's a good error,
yeah.
You wouldn't want it the other way, but
no,
huge numbers and huge mistakes, and it feeds into basically all of the predictions and calculations from the coronavirus, from the death rate, predicted from, if we don't lock down, there will be tens of thousands of deaths. As we see from places that haven't locked down, it's still possible to get thousands of deaths. It's still possible for things to get very ugly, but not on the scale that was predicted by any of these models. And the possibly with the economic forecasts, again, we're seeing some of them could be incredibly optimistic, some of them could be incredibly pessimistic. And I think we're going to have a lot more of these accounting errors. Yours was a good one. We could see some very bad, well, not good, good news, but a bad error. We could very well be seeing that go the other way.
One thing that I've often thought about, I don't think I've said it on the record yet, but I'm glad that in both Australia and New Zealand, it was never on the political agenda whether we'd be forced to wear masks in public like it is in the US. You've seen those people being arrested on public transport for not wearing masks. That hasn't been a topic of discussion at all.
And quite interestingly, it's basically been discouraged, really. Our health officials have been asked multiple times, should people wear masks? And every single time they say no. But possibly because they want to hoard, they don't want people to buy masks so that they can get them through to the medical staff. But now that we have an abundance of masks, they haven't changed that at all in New Zealand. It's a case of nobody needs to wear a mask kind of situation, which is a very interesting, different approach to what we're seeing. Obviously throughout Asia, Europe, and terrible in the United States. Yeah.
We've got another super chat here in the Unshackled YouTube chat from Dan Wandin. Do we want to, I'll read out the part about me, you read out the one about you.
All right.
So it says, hail Tim Wilms.
And hail Dewa De Boer. We can't do that in New Zealand. So the only person who is allowed to get a hail in New Zealand is Jacinda Ardern. I don't want to end up in prison or anything like that. So we just, going to have to decline that one and say all the hails must go to Jacinda.
So thank you for the 20 Australian dollars.
Tim very much appreciates it. Thank you, everyone, for watching. We're nearly getting to the end of the show. We'll just get into the getting near the wind-up. I think you may have some good news to end the show with, so that may be an appropriate time to head into the final one.
Yeah, the good news last week was that BuzzFeed Australia was shutting down, and we got more good news this week with 10 Daily, which is Network 10's news, lifestyle, and entertainment website, was shutting down as well. And it's always interesting to see on Twitter the types of people are sad about mainstream media outlet closures. They're either blue ticks or far left Twitter commentators, which I think tells you about. Yeah. It's funny that
they should have asked Jacinda for a $50 million bailout.
It's funny that they say that this is a blow to media diversity, and there'll be more media concentration, and that we need independent news now more than ever. I mean, The Unshackled is an independent news outlet, so is XYZ, so is Right Minds. Yes. But of course, we are.
Well, you're very diverse, Tim. You are the news. You provide the most diversity to the news of any.
But they don't mean
anyone. They're all the same.
Yeah, they don't mean independent thought, and they don't mean diversity of opinion.
<that's right. laughs> No. We can celebrate these small victories there, and. We haven't yet. In terms of in New Zealand, it was sort of thought to be, oh, could this be the end of the media? But it doesn't seem like any of them are going. They've had some big job losses, cuts, but everybody's going to survive. It looks like even Stuff, Australian-owned newspaper here, is not being bought out by the big NZME conglomerate, but rather is staying independent and maybe sold to somebody else. Who knows? The bidding was going to be for $1. That's what NZME wanted to buy it for. We've tried to put in a higher bid to say, look, it's a tough sale, but we'll take it for $2. I haven't heard back yet. So we, you know, but it would be great to pick up an established media source and run with it, yeah, for $2.
Network 10, they're owned by that independent, diverse media conglomerate Viacom CBS in the United States, who own Paramount Studios, CBS, Comedy Central, MTV.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. So anyway, so thank you all for your support. And we've got, yeah, as far as I know, independent media in New Zealand is doing very, very well. And thank you for the chat for reminding me. Hit like and, you know, come back next week. Participate in the comments. Tim really appreciates your super chats and he loves reading them out, even the bad ones.
Yeah.
And
because if you want independent media outlets like us to keep going, because, well, the reason a lot of these mainstream media outlets are failing is because ad revenue on the web is drying up. So the new model of news, if you value a news source, you're going to need to pay for it to continue it. We don't have paywalls on the Unshackled or Right Minds, so that's why we encourage our viewers to send through super chats, regular donations, or memberships on our website.
Exactly, and we have some independent media in New Zealand as well. I mentioned David Farrar at the beginning of the show. He is sort of National Party. He's actually thinking of providing donations for his site as well and doing extra content. The BFD, who I've mentioned a few times already, was talking to Juana, the editor-in-chief, the other day, who says, you know, things are going very well for them as well, especially at this time. People are looking for more alternative sources of news, and you know, things are going well for them, and you know, we're seeing good steady numbers here as well, and totally appreciate everybody's support there. And it's cheers. I was going to say at the beginning of the show, everyone to grab grab your gin or your whiskey or wine or whatever you drink and enjoy the show. Now I'm at the end, so you know, cheers to all of our listeners, and we're going to come back next week, and we will you'll be able to find me on rightminds.nz. In the meantime, I have not been doing much writing recently, although that may resume now with things starting to go back to normal. I may have different time to do more writing. And Tim has got a lineup of Australian media shows every night of the week as well. So
I've cut back for the time being. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not sure if I said it on last week's show, but I've cut back to three nights a week now, basically because I want to do some more writing for theunshackled.net, which I've missed. And we're also launching new sections on the Unshackled, a history section with Australian and Western civilization history essays, which is very exciting and adds to the real diversity of the site, and also a cultural review section as well, in addition to our news and essay section. I'll be back for Wilmsfront next Wednesday night, 6:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on YouTube and DLive. I should have as my guest on that show Craig Kelly, MP, who is one of the Liberal maverick backbenchers. He's nice. Quite outspoken on energy policy. He's in the process of publishing a 20-part series in the Spectator Australia, how the Wuhan virus killed the climate crusaders.
Oh, nice! That's good stuff, and good to hear that. And yeah, I always really enjoy writing. It's something, you know, I've been enjoying the show as well. Though it's been good to do a live show and just keep going even when I don't have time to write. And thank you everyone for watching. I'm pretty sure that's the end of the show. So we will see you next week. It's 8 p.m. New Zealand time and 6 p.m. Melbourne time.
Yep. Stay safe, everybody.
Stay free.
Value your freedom. Make sure you can get more of it back. Have a good weekend, everybody.